Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe. I'm Katie Giebenhain with Seminary Ridge Review for the Seminary Explores. My guests today are Michelle Bonchek-Every and Rob Every, the first artists in residence at the Gettysburg National Military Park and the Gettysburg Foundation. These award-winning poets bring extensive writing, teaching, and publishing experience to Gettysburg. They've also brought cameras and a telescope, and a very interesting concept for a collaboration project while they're here. Michelle and Rob, welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Hi, thank you.
So I would love to hear about how it's been going and what the rhythm of your days has been like, and do you want to just describe a little bit?
The days have been full, so we've been taking advantage of every moment, getting up early in the morning for sunrise, taking pictures, making coffee, writing, researching. We spent yesterday in the artifact room downstairs below the visitor center.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, we were able to actually touch, you know, uniforms and journals and read through them. The afternoons, we write, take pictures in the evening.
Yeah, a lot of early mornings, late nights. We've been getting up with sunrise, trying to take pictures, but then at night I've been trying to do some night photography.
Okay.
So with the stars in the background, so if we have a clear night or if there's a nice sunset, we actually have a pass that we can be in the park after the gates close at 10 o'clock.
Oh.
So we can come and go, and we're getting pictures of the monuments and landscapes with the night sky, and it's been really a lot of fun.
We've had so much access to materials and to people and experts and just passionate rangers, so we've been like deluged with like lectures and, just like I said, materials and expertise. So when we first arrived, we went on a car tour, like a three-hour car tour of the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
We got a personal tour also, where to eat, best places to park, that type of stuff. And we did the museum and the cyclorama. We have tickets for the Wills House and the Eisenhower House still we have to do. But it's been like, it's fed our writing and photography so much.
Yeah,
it's beyond anything we even
It's
imagined.
Been 3 weeks and we still have a lot to do.
It feels like we're just getting started.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. And you're working on, as I understand, sort of each of you, a series of poems in voices that have to do with sort of not only the history that you're researching, but also what you're observing here, right? Do you want to describe that a little bit, this sort of a collaboration?
Well, I've been taking on the voice of a soldier, which I didn't really mean to do, throughout the Civil War.
Okay.
So it's diary entries, and I'm taking some facts about the war and battle and what's been going on, and perspectives that you might not have been accounted in letters and things like that, the way the fear that some of the soldiers might have that they might not articulate to their sisters and mothers and family at home, but that they might be feeling and talk about amongst themselves. But also great things like for the first time seeing a hot air balloon or climbing up on a mountain, or what the roads might be like. You know, the different types of marching that they have to do and the daily life, you know, and how boredom can make mundane things seem interesting, you know. And so I have a couple characters that I'm working with right now through that.
Yeah, yesterday the curator, Greg Goodell, at the in the artifact room said that the old adage that war is 90% boredom and 10% terror.
Mm.
Seems to reflect the poems a lot. And speaking about being exposed to things for the first time, I mean, these were people who would not have really left their towns in a lot of cases. So they're crossing state lines, experiencing landscapes they never had before, meeting people they hadn't had before. I wrote a poem yesterday about a Confederate soldiers eating ice cream for the first time.
Oh, sure.
So it's really trying to get into their bodies and their humanity and their individual experiences and trying to make them come to life in ways we haven't read before.
And it's so interesting that you just mentioned the proportion of time. You know, there's so much fear and waiting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And boredom and waiting and uncertainty. And that's just not addressed nearly enough in writing, right? So I love that you're doing that. That's great. I mean,
seriously, that's so much more of what their daily life was like. I understand that you have some new work with you. That would be tremendous if you would be willing to read something.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Why don't you go first?
Okay.
This is as fresh as it gets.
So some of these are still nobody's heard them before.
Except ourselves.
Yeah. So I might start off with maybe a little darker one that depicts what you could consider something like Pickett's Charge, but it's the first time he's saying a bayonet charge. But he's also thinking of home, so he's conflicted because he thinks of home, and he also is thinking of battle and violence and domestic violence, because we have, this is a domestic dispute, the Civil War, but it also goes into the home. And right now I don't really have a title for it, but it might be titled Blackbirds.
Okay.
The first time I saw the Reds coming ready for a bayonet charge, the sight reminded me of the first time I saw my father hit my mother. I never knew people had the ability for such violence, in which their bones break that of another's, and how complacent a person can be to receive that violence. So there I was, like my mother, waiting to stand up against what looked like a forest of steel that I need to cut down with a volley of hollow iron mini-balls. I thought that they were hollow, so they would fly easier, you know, like birds, but that isn't the case. But still, I think of them like that, like a murderous band of blackbirds streaming toward a steel stand, each bayonet blinding in the sun. The blackbirds charge into the mass, and each strikes out a bright sun. When the Reds came across that field at double step, I grit my teeth and thought of mother waiting, and after a while, bent to a knee in fear and pain, unable to shoot or to fly away.
Wow. Thank you.
So some of the poems that I've been working on are in the voices of women soldiers, but also women at home, not on the front. And I had been reading about the Union blockade and all of the materials that people in the South would not have had access to, simple things, sewing needles, ice, meat, flour, things were really expensive if you could get it. Do you remember how the price of coffee increased?
It increased from $4 a pound to $400 a pound.
This is $400,
was
it that much?
Yeah, by the end of the war.
So this is called Seamstress. Women took to making their own materials because you couldn't really get materials anymore. So Seamstress. In the mornings, my sisters and I set out to pick from the hawthorn tree needles for stitching. We melt whatever beeswax is left from candle making into a small bowl and dip the full thorns down to the tips so we can better grip them sturdily through cloth. Since the blockade, it is said that we are subsisting, but this is not how I feel. We spin our own panels from cotton and wool, measure waist, cut sleeves, and sew our own dresses. With each poke and pull, I imagine uniting North and South, Negro and white, mother and son, body and arm.
My goodness, thank you. Wow. Those are both really powerful.
Thank you.
I'm curious about this mixture of, you know, looking so deeply and attentively at the past and also what you're seeing in front of you and the visitors that are coming. You've had some interaction so far, right? And you also have some events planned, like a workshop and also a reading, right?
Yep, we do.
Okay. How is this combination of, you know, focusing on your own work but also representing poetry for, you know, visitors that are coming? That's kind of a tangled question, perhaps.
But we have a couple things to say. So we have borrowed Living History costumes from the Visitor Center.
Well done.
And we plan to kind of spontaneously pop up in the park at different places over the next 10 days and read some of these poems in character. So that's one way we're connecting with visitors and bridging the past with the present and our poetry in with the park. We have... Tell her about the time we showed up at the Klingle House to a tour group.
We were out taking pictures, and we were coming back, I think, for lunch. And there was just a giant tour of people there, and somebody was giving a talk, and maybe 40 people outside the house, hearing about what had happened on the second and third day around the Klingle House. And everybody was there just to listen and be a part of history. And it was great to see that, and it was really interesting to everybody was there. They were curious about the house. They wanted to touch it. They wanted to interact with history in some way. And I guess what we're trying to do is to make it so that they can think and feel these things that the people were thinking at the time and how the locals might be feeling about the soldiers being there. And understanding how these structures, people have a connection with it. We see it. You know, they want to touch it. They want to look inside. They want to do all these things. And so it's really great to see people out there interacting with it and wanting to connect with it and learn about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of reverence, too. I mean, and you feel that, you know, respect and spirituality. We've driven, you know, we drive through the park. I don't know how I'm going to not drive through the park when we leave here because I feel a little empty when we don't get to do it now. But you see people setting up chairs next to different monuments and reading or having lunch or just sitting quietly. I mean, so there's this desire to connect physically to something, you know, and not just the past, but whatever physical things can bring you there.
And one way we want to help people connect and express their connection through history and through these things is one thing we're doing a workshop on Saturday at the Visitor Center, under the tents at the Visitor Center at 11 o'clock, and we're going to be doing a workshop on how to write poems or fiction about history, and how to incorporate it, and how it doesn't have to be just about history, but you can bring in your own personal feelings about it, even through information that you get, through historical information. You can relate to it. You can just simply write about how you relate to it. In poems, you notice that ours don't rhyme or have a strict meter like traditional poetry does. And I think for the first time people are introduced to modern poetry, that's the most striking thing is free verse. And getting away from that and being able to just express yourself without the constraints of rhyme and rhythm, and you can just talk about what you're thinking and feeling and interacting with this. So that's some of the goals we have set for Saturday at 11 o'clock that we're going to try and talk about and interact. We're going to have pens and pencils and paper for people to go through and find images and things that from the park that they find special and help them articulate their feelings about it.
Yeah, it's a free one-hour workshop that starts at 11. Visitor center, tents. Not just thinking like seamstress and kind of sewing together your personal experience with that of an individual in history. And I think some of the things we'll talk about on Saturday will be the poetic license and how, you know, poetry, fiction, it's not journalism. It's not nonfiction. It's not news. So it's not factual as far as those types of facts go. We're not writing a history book, right? Like, we're telling stories and finding ways to enter people's experiences so we're refreshed by them and understand that they're universal experiences in a lot of ways. So we're going to talk a lot about that on Saturday, too.
You're listening to The Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain with poets Rob Every and Michelle Bonshek Every, the July Artists in Residence at the Gettysburg National Military Park. I know this might sound like kind of an early question to ask because you're still so deeply into your experience here, but I would be really interested in hearing about ways that you think this is going to shape your work and your lives as you go on, because you're bringing a lot of experience here, right? Mm-hmm. But you're also, could you say something about your other work that you do and the lives that you'll be going back to and how you're already feeling like this might be influencing that?
Yeah, it's a really good question because it already is. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I studied under the poet Bill Hain, who has many books on historical events and the Holocaust and Crazy Horse and Custer. And he has one book even called Diana, Charles, and the Queen, I think. And so he, you know, that's kind of my poetic heritage.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was really present in me until I came here, and I find that, you know, there's something from decades ago coming up in me from learning under him and writing under him, because that's what he does. And I had already written some poems about the Lewis and Clark journey, but I feel like these experiences are, I don't know, they're like sculpting a different part of my voice. It's definitely broadening the scope of what and who I'm writing about. If you had asked me, you know, 6 months ago, if I would have been writing poetry about the Civil War, that would have been like, what are you talking about? What? No. But that's exactly what's happening. And it just is leading to other avenues in historical research.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I think I've loved Gettysburg and I've loved history my whole life. I've been here a couple times as a kid. We were here a few years ago too, and I love history, but I've never really written about it. I've never really had it as a subject matter. What I used to write about, or what I still do, is a lot of science fact information. So I'm used to putting information and fact and relating it into the human experience, which I think is popular in poetry right now and in writing. And so I've shifted now to using the same tactic that I might use or approach with scientific writing, which really fascinates me, to historical. And so I think this is going to shift me from talking more politically and socially about issues in our culture instead of, you know, just like complaining about myself or like my insecurities or my life or something, and broadening out and to talk about bigger issues in the human lifetime, what we've been struggling with for so long, with war and politics and the people who are in charge and not thinking about the, you know, 99% of people who struggle every day and who fight the wars for, or the people who politically work for the elite, and thinking about things like that. And so it's shifting me towards that. And that shift came before a little bit before we got here. And it's really solidifying my approach towards it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I was moving anywhere away from narrative, that's definitely not happening now. back to narrative writing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been becoming more narrative instead of more lyrical through this. And it's really interesting because some of these kind of come off as short stories and journal entries, very voice-oriented instead of sounding like modern poetry, where in some senses where it might be lyrical or disconnected. I'm using voices and colloquialisms that you might just hear in regular speech that you would cut out of poems in a lot of ways, but that's how I'm working towards it.
Like two things. So Rob has said it so many times since you've been here that I think I'm writing fiction.
Yeah.
These are poems.
It's weird, yeah.
But you were already writing prose. You were already leaning towards prose poems.
Prose poems, yeah. But they weren't. They were lyrical prose poems instead of some narrative prose poems. It's mm-hmm. kind of telling a story or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like to think of poetry as being verse fiction anyway. That's
yeah.
kind of how I see it.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's just tightly shaped fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
even free verse is such, right? You're
Absolutely.
Thinking about line breaks and stuff, but I totally think about it as fiction,
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah.
So I love hearing that.
Yeah, I think I changed many years ago when I thought of myself as a storyteller. Even in a poem, you have to tell a story. You have to have a reason why you're writing, and you have to have tension, and you have to have conflict and resolution or not, because not everything really resolves, and it can. But when I think of myself as a little bit of a storyteller, my poems come out clearer, and they come out with more purpose.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking also that, as odd as it may seem, 6 months ago to have asked if I would be writing Civil War poems, and I would say no. At the same time, it seems like some sort of cornerstone, because it fits perfectly. I have the background in early American literature and history that, you know, was one of my specializations when I did my PhD. I've written scholarship on Ralph Waldo Emerson. I teach, you know, Thoreau and Whitman, and it's all there. And so in some ways, it makes too much sense in Gettysburg, and I'm writing about what I am.
But there's something about physically being here, right?
Right.
That's sort of having those things fall into place.
Oh, yeah. Every day we get to wake up and step outside and see where Pickett's Charge was and Little Round Top and the peach orchard. You know, we run it. We've been running it almost every day, getting to really know the landscape. And it's really interesting because every little place in this park has a different landscape. You know, you have Devil's Den, which is really rocky. You have Little Round Top, which is a nice aerial view of everything. You have giant fields, and you have forests of Culp's Hill. And it's every little place has something inspiring about it. And every day we wake up and walk around, there's just something new to see and do.
And I'm thinking about the museum, too, that does a really great job of placing Gettysburg.
The visitor center?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. The museum there. You get the whole story of slavery, of civil rights. And, you know, you go to the museum and you see the door from John Brown's prison, like where he was staring at that door. You know, in the artifact rooms, there's the pike, the spear that he had made for the attack on Harper's Ferry. So you're surrounded by like these artifacts. You know, it's just that word that comes up of history makes it so real, and it doesn't feel so distant when you are embedded here.
What would you each say is the most surprising thing you've experienced so far?
Wow. I think the community. I think the passion of the people working here and the community. And we've met people that are from overseas that save up to come here and visit Gettysburg. We've met people that come every year and have written scholarship about it, and we can sit down at O'Rourke's and have a drink and talk to these people just because we're sitting there. The passion of, and this is a very scholarly national park. Like the guides and the rangers here, they have so much information. They know so much. It's amazing just to be in the presence of it. And you think about the campfire talks that happen here almost every night at 8:30, and we learn something new about the research that these people do into the lives. We saw a great one on Dan Sickles. There's actually one tonight that Burt Barnett is doing on Civil War poetry. Mm-hmm. So really excited that how involved people are in the culture and the history and how much knowledge they have. That's been amazing and a great resource for us.
Yeah, so not to sound too solipsistic, like the thing that surprises me most is my reaction to things.
Huh, interesting.
So I don't like to watch war movies. It's hard for me to read about war. It's hard for me to teach, like, Frederick Douglass in my early American literature class. So Rob watches the war movies when I'm away, out of town. So, but since we've been here, like, I am wanting to watch the documentaries and the well-made films and to go back to the literature that I often shy away from, and to actually have an interest in military strategies and tactics. Like, I'm surprised that how much of an interest it's kind of foamed up in me about these things.
Wow. I would love to hear another example of some of the writing that you've been doing.
I can read one of my more narrative, lighter poems.
Okay.
So you can get a sense of maybe what I'm doing with narrative, because the last one is a little lyrical and imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is it's just kind of what might happen at camp. And there's a name in it. the person whose journal entry this is taking, there's a soldier named Jonah, and that is a slang term for a lazy soldier or one that is prone to accidents. So I kind of took him on, and he is a reoccurring character that is kind of has some of those issues with camp. So this one, I don't have a title yet because these are still kind of raw. So I guess I'll just call it The Beans.
Okay.
For days, they had us pack up every morning like we were heading out to the war. We would march all day in columns. If we were wearing green instead of blue, you would think that a field of corn up and grew legs, fixing to suck a river dry from the hot sun and thirst of marching. But we just end up back in the same field we left in the morning, no better than when we left. We do some drills, set up our tents, and sit for chow. We might even be worse off. One time, setting up camp again, Jonah was trying to chop up a fence post he took from a farm down the road for firewood. The axe head missed the post, and he hit it with the handle, breaking it. The head flew a few feet and hit a man bent over the fire, checking his can of beans square in the head. He stumbled like he was drunk, hit the two planks which rested all of our beans over the fire. Then some of them tipped outright and some seated upright in the coals, but one, some odd force flung a boiling can on the opposite end of the plank, like I once saw a circus man do to a monkey with a pole on a barrel, catching the monkey in a peach pie. But this can caught the man in the leg, and I could hear every chord in his throat sing as the water moved down his boot. Every man first tried to save his can before checking on the health of the man hit in the head. That is what they teach us. If a man falls next to you, keep to your duty. In this case, the beans.
Nice. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. You got to decide what to read here. I think I'm going to read the first poem that I wrote when we got here. It was my way of kind of entering the experiences of women, mm-hmm. not on the field. It's called Infantry. Little Willie, not so little anymore, found your brown leather belt and named it Snake. I told him your victorious story, copperhead tucked behind rock, venom dripping from your boot. The way you lay into him with the shovel's front tooth slicing his curled body into four reeling lines. Mary teething all day at my breast. Against her gums we rub minnows, Willie nets silver as your lucky horseshoe buckle, cool on her mouth. I know I shouldn't, but the other day, moonshine in my cup, I dipped one finger, let her suck. Finally, a school of hours, I too could sleep. And Emile, who fits into your shoes, able now to reach the high jars, he who lifts Mary to the sky until she laughs, just like you used to. He tends the cattle, runs the horses like you taught. But in the red light of sunset, I see his lean body breathe leaner, and we pray each night no letter calls his body to those other fields, the gold wheat I picture bending around your form, the rivers I heard turn blood. Here it is our blood in the fields, our blood in the sinks, our blood mixing with soil we wash from roots, ours at the table beating where Emile lays his dice in your place, and we pray for your return.
Mm. Wow, thank you. Only part of war happens on the battlefield, right? Only part of it. Thank you for listening to The Seminary Explores. Learn more about Rob and Michelle's work and opportunities to get involved with poetry at The Poets Billow. Visit the web at www.thepoetsbillow.org. Thank you so much, Rob and Michelle.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.